Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Well, Brandon, I don't know where to begin. Should we start with Cody? Should we start with a bloodline, or should we start with the bloodline? I screwed up my gimmick there. The bookended edition of SmackDown, bloodline at the beginning with Cody, bloodline at the end with Sammy. I just excellent stuff on both sides. What do you want to start with?
Let's start with the Sammy stuff.
Yeah.
Because I'm a little perplexed in that they're still leaning heavily into this angle with Sammy, and I understand that they need to do that for the sake of the Usos and Kevin Owens and Solo Sikoa and however that comes together. But Roman Reigns still seems very, very much preoccupied with Sami Zayn, and so far they haven't really done the legwork on commentary to try to tie that into the Cody Rhodes story in a way that makes you feel like maybe Roman Reigns is overlooking Cody Rhodes and WrestleMania. And I think that they need to do that if this is how things are going to continue for the next several weeks. The one kind of issue that I think that they're going to run into, and I think we saw it tonight, was that despite the interaction between Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes being quite good, and I thought that segment was very enjoyable in and of itself, it still feels so much less personal than what is going on with the bloodline and with Sami Zayn. And so they've got some work to do to try to up the ante on this Rhodes and Reigns feud.
So what I love about this storyline right now, what I love about what's going on with Roman and Sammy and Roman and Cody is that they both are working concurrently at the same time. I don't feel like they're competing with each other. I feel like they are coexisting, and the fact that Roman has to be worried about Cody on one hand and then the fractures in the bloodline because of Sammy with Jay not being there in the other, I think makes Roman feel more vulnerable to Cody when Cody doesn't give in or show that he was intimidated by Roman. And like the brilliance of Roman walking from the ring, and when he turned to look at Cody, smiling or feigning confidence, but as soon as he looked away from Cody, he looked concerned. Like Reigns is putting up a front that he's okay with what's going on with Cody, and it is because of what's going on with Sammy. And I love that right now. So to me, I think they work concurrently with each other. Sammy is causing issues. Roman is preoccupied a lot of the time with that, but he thinks that he can use very personal stories about Dusty to undercut what Cody is trying to do to shake Roman's confidence. So again, in that opening segment, Cody, and this is like sort of like stepping back from the storyline, but not really. Cody is standing in the ring with Roman and holding his own. Like he looks like he belongs in there. He can listen to Roman without flinching. He can smile and shake his head, and that's rattling Roman. And Roman is more vulnerable to that because he has to immediately turn to this other issue going on with cracks in the bloodline. So to me, they're already playing off of each other well. And I think it's apparent that that's what's going on, that Cody is holding his own opposite of Roman thinking he's getting very, that's the one thing I disagree with you on. I think that Roman is being very personal with Cody about his dad, and it feels very personal. And at the same time, Roman has this huge concern with Jay not being there and Sammy still being this just sort of be flying around his head, just stinging the various order that Roman relies upon to hold everything together. So to me, I think the two things are working really well, and I don't know that they have to overtly address it in any other way other than what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly understand. I understand that point, and I think you're right on a lot of counts. I think the reason the angle with Cody and Roman isn't quite feeling all the way there yet in terms of, you know, having the gravitas that I think the Sami Zayn angle does, it is partially because, yes, Roman did get really personal tonight, and I thought that it was on the highest end of how people have cut these Dusty-centric promos against Cody Rhodes. The one thing, though, is that has kind of been the hook for all of Cody Rhodes' feuds in WWE so far. Everyone who Cody is working with and is matched up with in a major program has some personal and deep connection to Dusty Rhodes, and they're all kind of going to that same well, saying that, you know, they were in effect a surrogate son to Dusty, and that they were there when Cody was not, and that they were preferred to Cody. So I thought that it was fine to hit those beats again tonight, because I thought that Reigns did it on a higher end than I think we've seen in the past. I just want to see a little bit more out of both of them, and I think we'll get it. I mean, this was the very first time that they were in the ring together, and I don't know how many opportunities they're going to give them to kind of play off of each other. I sort of expect that maybe Paul Heyman may do more of the heavy lifting over on Raw with Cody, but I do want to see more there. I don't mind the interplay with Sami Zayn so long as it doesn't feel like it's bigfooting the Cody angle. And I thought they walked the line tonight, and it was close. I mean, Reigns didn't make any mention of Cody again later in the night. He was preoccupied entirely by what was going on with Jimmy and Jay and Sammy. But I think it's going to be a week-to-week thing how I feel about it. So I'm certainly optimistic, and I like the direction that they're headed, and I'm confident that they're going to turn this program with Cody into something that I'm really excited to see. But I was surprised too by some of the reaction that I was seeing online immediately after that Reigns and Cody program. There were a lot of people just scrolling through Twitter who were thinking that Reigns really sort of emasculated Cody, and I didn't see that at all. I agree with you. I thought Cody held his own. I thought that Reigns said things that rattled Cody, but he was able to stand up to them and use it as a motivator rather than something that was going to make him seem lesser than.
Yeah. I guess I just really liked the Cody Reigns segment, and I think it hit I think that what they wanted to accomplish and then how they accomplished it really worked for me. I did not think Cody got emasculated there. I think Cody sat there and listened to Roman be nasty about his father and in rubbing it in Cody's face that your dad, Cody, told me I had it, and that whether it's true or not, and we'll never know because it was between Roman and Dusty, but for Roman to say, and you know what he said about you? Nothing. Like to say that if true, or even worse, if not true, although they're both really bad, and to throw that in the face of your opponent, and then to have Cody take that and not just fall apart, but say if you're the son that he always wanted, that changes everything, and I need to finish this story by taking the championship and to just go may the best man win, and to shake his hand, like to shake Roman's hand and go, you just delivered the best shot you thought you could to me. Stood here, and I took it, and I shook my head. And, you know, because Roman was like, good promo, Cody. You practiced that all week. And Cody essentially did that to Roman. He's like, all right, counter serve, kind of rock Cena, but in the ring together, not one week and then another. And then to just go, let's shake hands, may the best man win. That was, I really like that. But then to have Roman leave the ring. And I mean, I don't know how many people like noticed or studied, you know, to study, but like paid attention to Roman, but he smiled at Cody. And again, the acting there, I think, was really good, because the smile was not, I'm not rattled, you're rattled, and I got you. It was more, I need to convey that I'm not rattled by smiling at you, but you just took my best shot and shook my hand, and you said, may the best man win. And I mean, like, if people didn't notice, go back and watch. As Reigns left the ring, he turned, and when Cody could see his face, he smiled at him like, haha, I got you. And then as soon as he turned away from Cody, all this worry flooded into his face that that was his best shot, the story about Cody's dad, and Cody stood there and took it. So I really like this. I don't get the idea that this was an emasculation.
Yeah, no, I very much did not agree with that sentiment, and I was surprised by how much I was seeing it, because you know, usually you kind of see the one-off comments, people that are just not, you know, not into the segment or have some sort of agenda, but it was sort of consistent, and it was surprising to me. I thought, like you said, I thought Reigns in particular was really excellent for his part in terms of the delivery. I thought when he was delving into the story about Dusty, that sounded like Roman Reigns speaking on the Tonight Show, like just completely out of character, just, you know, cool guy Joe just having a conversation. I mean, he shed the Roman Reigns character in so much as nothing about that felt like he was cutting a promo. It felt like he was having a conversation with Cody. And that was the first time, and that's a compliment, because I mean, Roman has been fantastic for 2+ years now on the microphone, but that was a different side of Reigns. That wasn't something we've seen on this run. His guard was just completely down, and he was just conversing with Cody in a really, really natural and tangible way that I thought was excellent.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we want to hear from you. What do you think? Let's pause, introduce ourselves, introduce the show, and get to phone calls and emails, and get our listener, our live streaming listeners' feedback on this. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, March 3rd, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter and the website, pwtorch.com. You can also check out my new YouTube page at youtube.com/Wade Keller, including my reading of a 30 years ago back issue cover story that I wrote about the suicide death of Kerry Von Erich, also some YouTube shorts with some ratings notes and other stuff. I'm just kind of playing around with it, seeing what I want to do with that platform, and hope you'll check it out. And of course, it always helps if you like and comment, in terms of, you know, the algorithm and it sending my videos into the suggested streams of the vast YouTube universe. So if all of you do that, it would make a big difference really quickly. So thanks to those who've already done that. Check that out. The other voice you hear so far is my co-host tonight, Brandon LeClaire, from pwtorch.com. He is our Alt Perspective pay-per-view reporter, and he appears on post shows on a regular basis after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Brandon, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here. It's actually been a little bit. I was on the post pay-per-view or post PLE roundtable for Elimination Chamber, but I was just looking at our history, and I haven't been here co-hosting since the go home show for the Royal Rumble. So it's been a bit, and it happens to fall on a week where I'm already pulling torch duty this weekend, as I'll be of course covering AEW Revolution on Sunday. So
absolutely, yeah. Well, that's going to be a I don't know what's more challenging, a longer AEW pay-per-view or a Royal Rumble with everything going on in the Rumble.
Oh man, I think having done a couple of years worth of Rumbles now, I think it's probably the Rumble, only because I've said this before, with AEW pay-per-views, commentary is so good about saying the names of moves that I don't have to like slip into my memory banks quite as often, because AEW kind of does the work for you. Whereas, yeah, with the Royal Rumble, when you're trying to keep track of that stuff, it can get a little crazy. But those the trios matches in AEW and the ladder matches, those can get a little hairy when you're trying to cover them.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so check out our coverage of AEW Revolution on Sunday night on our Blue Logo Show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post show. It's got the red logo. The Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast has a blue logo. Both are free. Just search Wade Keller to subscribe to both. And the flagship edition yesterday featured PW Torch VIP contributor Todd Martin and his preview of AEW Revolution. So, if you haven't checked that out yet, please do. All right, we want to talk SmackDown here, and we want you to join us. The number to call is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard, so we know that you want to be brought onto the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, let's go to calls, and we'll begin, I believe, with an international call here. Not sure from where. If you are calling us from out of the United States, please state your name and let us know where you're calling from.
It's Joel from Birmingham in the UK.
Hey, Joe, good to hear from you.
Can you hear me?
Cool hearing from the UK. Yeah, we sure can. Thanks for calling. What do you think of SmackDown? Yeah.
Yeah, my mind's on the opening segment.
Yes.
Reigns has just been, I know it kind of sounds redundant to say how good he is, but considering he's been, I guess, been with us for like 10 plus years, but these last 2 to 3 years, he's really hit his stride. And it's like, he's gotten really, really good. Like, I know you guys were talking over the last 10 minutes about how good that whole segment was and like Reigns himself, but I'm just watching him. And not to take anything away from Cody, because he brings his own energy and his promo style. But like, I think what Brandon was saying in terms of like, I don't think Rhodes was emasculated by Reigns, but I think in terms of performance, I think it was overshadowed by Roman. So I don't know if that's part of it, and I suppose a little bit of the whole, like, you know, he's bringing his father into it, and like Cody didn't necessarily bring anything back that had as much weight as Roman bringing his father into it. But I just thought it was like a spectacular. It was a really good segment all around, and like as you said, Wade, like you're waiting for this moment, like seeing these two in the ring together, and like I think it lived up to its promise.
I think if there's any critique of the segment, and I think it's what's causing some people to think Roman emasculated him, is just how much more Roman talked than Cody. Cody, you know, delivered the opening salvo, and Roman just sort of, you know, talked down to him and said, oh, that was great. Looks like sounds like you've been practicing that all week. And then Roman, you know, said, hey, guess what? Your dad thought I had the it factor, and implied, you know, he didn't really think much about you, Cody. So I get that. And Cody didn't have a lot to say in return. And I guess, Brandon, if Cody did have something to say to Roman after that, like, did you anticipate what he might say, or did you think, oh, what if it would have been better if he had said this? Because as Joe says, Roman's performance was great. And I mean, that's just, I think that's a given, no matter where you are on this segment. But I thought Cody, body language wise, confidence wise, exuded confidence, took Roman's best shot and said, well, you know, it almost like whether what you're, I don't necessarily believe you, Roman, but if you're telling the truth, then you know what? I have to show everybody, including my dad, in a way that I'm better than you. And just not, you know, because sometimes walking away from an argument is the victory, and in a, or no, not no selling, but sort of like, all right, I took your best shot. Let's shake hands and let's just have a match. I thought that worked for me, but that would not be against Cody firing back with something at Roman. You know, perhaps even a dig about how he can't keep his own group in line. You know, here he is talking about Dusty saying he has it factor, but he apparently doesn't have enough to leadership skills to keep everybody in his group on the same page. Would that have been better, or something else have been better if Cody were to have said more after what Roman said?
I think it would have been fine, but I like that they kept it short, because I think by not indulging Reigns with a significant response, it demonstrated a quiet confidence in Cody, and Cody is going to have ample opportunity to respond at length on Raw's when Roman is not there and they need to fill TV time with Cody talking about the match. Mm-hmm. So I think keeping it short tonight and letting Cody, you know, give the definitive closing there to the promo, say that, you know, it becomes a necessity now that he beats him. I think that's all that needed to be said for now. And I think it sends the message, you know, quietly that he is still confident, that if anything, what Reigns said didn't fully shake him, but rather made him more confident. So yeah, I think what they did worked well.
Joe, back to you. You can respond to the same question I asked Brandon or bring something else up if you'd like.
Yeah. Just to, I guess, put a bow on it. Yeah, I agree that you've got like 4 weeks left. So,
Yeah,
both Cody's got time to, I guess, to respond back, whether it's in equal measure or like to go in a slight another direction. But as for SmackDown itself, the rest of SmackDown, I liked Sheamus and Drew McIntyre, like their confrontation before everyone else kind of jumped in. And that's when it kind of like went into the, you know, everyone interrupting everyone and all the rest of it, kind of that kind of like old like trope. But I did like that initial like back and forth between like Sheamus and Drew, and just the fact it's all for the intercontinental title. Like I just love that title is being, like, it's being treated that way, where it's like it's a major prize that's really wanted. And the only issue I'll probably have is that on TV, we probably don't know the reasons why Sheamus wants the Intercontinental. Well, I know he's had his previous two matches with Gunther, but like he's been talking about it for years, how he really wants that intercontinental like championship to complete his Grand Slam set. So hopefully at some point they would bring it up. They might possibly bring it up before in the build up to the Gunther match. But I just want them to like just re-emphasize that, like why that title specifically means so much to Sheamus. But yeah, I did like that initial confrontation between Drew and Sheamus, and it did kind of like, I guess, it did kind of de-escalate as more people got involved. Even LA Knight, who generally I'm really high on, generally, but when he kind of interrupted it, I was about to be, so what do you guys think?
Yeah, I was not expecting Sheamus to come out and call out Drew for not, you know, for going behind his back to challenge for the title. And then when he explained, you know, that's a title I really want, I'm like, okay, maybe Drew the implication there is, obviously, Drew knows how much the title means to Sheamus. Whether they explained it well or not to the viewers is not a non-issue, but it works even without it. Because this is just two friends who have gone to war, gone to battle, talking amongst themselves. And Sheamus felt upset, like, you know, this title means a lot to me. You know, we should have talked it out. You know, who's going to get the challenge? Who should walk out there and challenge him for WrestleMania? And let's work that out beforehand. We did get the, you know, one after another coming out. And I don't think they've been doing that a lot lately. It seems like that's been something they've been doing less often. And this doesn't appeal to everybody. But I think it's smart, and I think it's usually well executed that WWE makes trying to earn a major match on WrestleMania a storyline going into WrestleMania, that there just isn't room for everybody to get a big match. And so if you're going to have an instance where Drew's calling out the champ, Sheamus goes, hey, wait a second, what about me? It does make sense that Loudmouth LA Knight would interrupt. And then as a counter to that, Kofi would be like, you know, well, Xavier pointed it out, but you can't even win on SmackDown, and now you want to get a title shot on Raw, and kind of pointing out the preposterousness of a heel going, I want a title shot when he lost last week. And, of course, Kofi's win last week takes on new it's framed differently now because it was what was necessary for Kofi to be justified at all to come out and call out Knight. So I think last week's finish served another purpose because they were looking ahead to this week. And then, you know, Cross just being in the mix too and is fine. So that sets up the Fatal 5-Way next week to earn the IC title shot. I like that. I don't want a ton of the Parade of Wrestlers coming out all talking leading to a 5-Way match. But in this case, there's only one – well, in theory, there's only one spot to challenge Gunther. That's certainly the assumption going in, and they all want it. So this segment worked for me, and the personal stuff between Drew and Sheamus – felt like there happened to be a camera and a microphone there, but this is something that might have happened off camera because of how much Drew and Sheamus, how close they are and how much they know about each other's own motivations. So, Brandon, what's your take on what Joe said, what I said in the segment?
Yeah, I thought that the thing with Sheamus and Drew felt a little forced at first, but as they got going, I kind of came around to it. The idea that these are two friends who have similar goals at this point in time, there isn't necessarily a reason to have set up a disagreement between them because this in and of itself is the disagreement, and you can very easily argue that McIntyre simply decided he was going to challenge Gunther for the Intercontinental title. He didn't consult with Sheamus. Sheamus heard him talking in the back and felt slighted. So you have your setup right there. So the further it got, the better I felt about it overall. I definitely was not a huge fan of the Parade of Wrestlers, kind of like what you said, Wade. I think that more often than not comes off a little too planned. It's too heavily scripted, but they did do a nice job at least giving you a reason for wrestlers to be coming out there, with I guess the exception of Karrion Kross. I mean, LA Knight comes out because he's an egomaniac, obsessed with being on the WrestleMania card. There are two guys out there talking and arguing about who's going to get on the WrestleMania card, so LA Knight sees his opportunity to come and run his mouth. New Day makes sense coming out because Kofi, of course, like you said, defeated LA Knight last week. So if LA Knight has a claim, then naturally Kofi has a claim. So I liked that they at least set the stage that way. This, of course, all leads to that 5-way match next week on SmackDown. I thought that it was curious the way that they phrased the match. They called it what was the exact phrase? It was not they didn't call it a contenders match. Do you remember, Wade, they put it on the graphic on screen?
No, I didn't notice, actually.
It wasn't like they weren't overt about saying, like, this is for a title shot at WrestleMania.
Okay.
So it was very unclear as to what they were actually setting up. It wasn't like championship opportunity either. So it made it clear that the winner of the match is presumably going to get an Intercontinental title shot, but they did not specify that it would be at WrestleMania.
Let's see. Joe, you look like you're going to, or sound like you're going to jump in and tell us what was said there.
I think, I think it might have been either a Fatal 5-Way elimination match. I'm not too sure. I could be wrong on that.
Sean emailed from Tess email or messaged and said they called it an Intercontinental title contenders match.
Yes.
So
okay.
It's a little bit, there it is, a little bit short of a, you know, winner gets a title shot.
Yeah.
Cool. So, Joe, anything else for us?
No, I want to say, I'm a big fan. Yeah, I've been a VIP member for a good couple of years now. And just a shout out to you and the rest of your crew and staff. Big fan, like all around. You, Todd, Rich fan. I'm just like a big fan, and like the content is more than worth it. So As the saying goes, like, go VIP, everyone. And, like, I would leave you guys to it. And just have a good rest of the show.
Awesome. Joe, thank you. Great hearing from you. Thanks so much for your kind words and your support. Call again.
Will do. If I'm up this late, I'm going to do. All
right. It's very late there. Thanks. Yeah, it would be great to hear more from the UK, but yeah, it's like 4 in the morning there or something right now. What time is it in the UK? It is, 3:40 a.m. So,
oh, man.
Well, cool. Cool hearing from Joe. We'd love to hear from you. 347-215-8558. Push 1 on your keypad when you call. You can find our live stream if you're listening to our show by downloading it later. You can hear our live stream at WadeKellerPostShow.com. There's a direct link to the direct stream in my reports on Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night at PWTorch.com. At the top and bottom of the report, just click on the link. That probably wasn't a cheap call for Joe either, being on hold and calling from the UK. So even more props to him. All right. Let's go next to Jay in Michigan. Jay, thanks for calling. You're up next. What's in your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Thanks for taking my call, Wade. And who's on? Brandon?
Yeah. Brandon, yeah.
Hey, what's going on? What's going on, Brandon?
Hey.
Thanks for taking my call, guys. So I kind of wanted to get into the whole opening segment, man, and kind of just, I guess, pick apart a little bit what's going on with the Bloodline angle as we head to Mania. I like that they're telling the story, and Wade, you mentioned it, man. I like the way things are tied together, but not like so like intertwined. It's like it's kind of making it where they're sort of telling the story that Roman, you know, like Cody is not the underdog. Like they're trying to tell it like Cody is the equal. Cody is the equal. I'm sorry, man. I'm driving. If you hear anything in the background, but Cody is the equal, and Sammy was the underdog. But I think that the idea that Sammy is lingering, taking away some of Roman's attention, will play into the fact that if Cody Rhodes does defeat him, you know, that will play a part. And, you know, we can kind of continue the Bloodline sort of like, you know, coming undone with multiple stories from there. But, like, you know, my question is this, and I hear you kind of talk about this a little bit, Wade, when it just comes to Cody Rhodes in general. Now, I struggle just the visual of actually seeing somebody pin Roman's shoulders to the mat for a 3 count and winning this title. It feels like they got to be 100% sure that this guy can do this and this guy can take this thing to the next level or wherever they want to run with it. And I'm looking at it like, do we know, because I feel like a lot of people are making it like it's a foregone conclusion that Cody's going to win this. And it's like, do we know that Cody's really, really the guy? Because I feel like, you know, I read some reports about Austin turning down the opportunity, you know, to fight Roman at Mania. And then we know that The Rock was the first option. So it's like we're kind of coming to Cody as maybe the third option for the Mania opponent for Roman, and we're sure that he's going to be the guy to take the title?
No. I'll just dispute that report.
I wasn't saying that this was factual. I just read a report. He said he turned down the opportunity or whatever. But we know, definitively we know, that The Rock would have been the ideal opponent. Now, if that was going to mean they was going to have Cody, you know, if they was going to have Roman work both nights, then that's one thing. But we know for certain The Rock versus Roman Reigns was the ideal main event. So, like, you know, felt like this promo was awesome, and I thought that Cody really, really stood up strong, and I like what they're doing, but like, are we really, really going to do this with Cody? Like, is this really going to happen?
Well, let me ask Brandon, what do you think of putting aside whether this was their first choice or not? Is Cody showing you so far that he has a crowd behind him and he can look like he's credible against Roman and that he would be good beyond a Roman feud as the guy who ended Roman Reigns's 900-plus day title reign at that point?
I think so. I think this is, you know, when Reigns really got going and the Bloodline story really kicked off and really started gaining steam, Wade, you and I talked on these post-shows and you talked with many other people kind of, you know, racking our brains, who could be the guy to dethrone Roman Reigns? You don't want to waste what you've built with him at this point. You've built the most impressive title run of the modern era. You don't want to waste it. You don't want just a Brock Lesnar to take the title off of Roman Reigns, who, you know, someone who's had the title X number of times, who they've done this with before. It's got to be the right person, and it's got to be someone special. And I think at the time, we kept going back to the idea that it's very possible that that person is not on the roster yet. And it just so happens that the person who looked most likely to do it was in AEW at the time. It was Cody Rhodes. I had high expectations for what Cody could be in this second run in WWE, but I think he's already surpassed those expectations. I mean, this is a guy who very easily could have had fans turn on him coming out of the Sami Zayn story and how hot Sami has been as a character. This is a guy who really could still have fans turning on him because they're still so invested in Sami Zayn, who we talked about at the start of the show, has certainly not moved on from the bloodline. So there's a reminder for people watching this show every single week that Sami is still right there. And yet they're still popping huge for Cody Rhodes every time he's on screen. And that is a great sign that they've got something special here. I think there's two ways to look at this. The first is, do you want to get the most out of the championship that Roman Reigns has held for so long? If you are looking to honor the prestige of the championship primarily, and that is your focus, then I think Cody Rhodes is the right guy and WrestleMania is the right time to do it. If you want to go in another direction and you want to say the most important thing is telling the best, most conclusive, most satisfying story that you can with the bloodline, the hottest angle in pro wrestling in the last several years. If you are more focused on telling the perfect story with the bloodline, not just the world title, then I think it's Jey Uso. And it's just a matter of which side is more important to WWE and which side do you personally fall on as far as which master is more important to serve, the title or the bloodline angle?
I think there's good options. You know, multiple good options with how Reigns' reign ends. And also just not ending it. And he goes all the way through turning babyface before the reign ends. And I'm intrigued, and I do not think there's I think there's reason to not believe it's a foregone conclusion what happens in this match, despite, I think, some widespread belief that it's just been, you know, written in ink that Cody's ending things. And I think it's going to be if they were committed to Cody winning at one point, I think that they could look at the lay of the land and say, do we still want to do that? I think they might say, yeah, we still want to do it. And then they look at Cody's performance and the crowd reaction, and that either validates their decision or that makes them second guess it. And we have a month to go. So it might be an open question at this point. It also might not. They might be 100% committed to one outcome or the other. I don't want to know. I hope people who know zip it, because I don't want to know the ending to the season finale of Succession. And I don't want to know the ending to the season finale of, the main event of WrestleMania this year. I see no value
in finale now.
Yeah, I know. I see no value. And that is, you know, just like, you know, and obviously there's, you know, a chance it's wrong even if a quote spoiler gets out or minds are changed. So just, you know, enjoy the ride and see what happens. Cody beating Reigns and ending his run as champion elevates Cody to a stature that he's not going to be able to get in any other context. He's not 25. He's not Austin Theory. You know, it's not like, well, you know, you can circle back a couple more times. You know, Cody is mid to late 30s, and there's, you know, decent amount of mileage there. And this is a WrestleMania main event against an amazing championship run in Roman Reigns. if they believe in Cody and they want to elevate him and they think we need this guy to be a top star for the next 3 to 7 years for us, this is the time to do it. And that'll be the reason they do it. And it will also be because they think they can tell an amazing story with Roman, even if he's no longer champion. And that can be a match against Jay. It can be a rematch or more against Sammy. It can also involve The Rock. I'm not ruling out, and I don't think this would be good for Cody if Rock helps Cody beat Reigns. But if Rock merely offsets, if he shows up unannounced and offsets interference from the Bloodline, that is an amazing moment. And then Cody is part of that. And, you know, the key is for Cody to win on his own, and Rock is just there stopping interference. There's a lot of things that could happen in this match. And there's ramifications, good and bad, to whatever decision they make, because any decision they make is a lost opportunity to do something different. Jay is amazing, and it's very tempting to say, you know, make Jay. Cody will be just fine, but Jay has more in him. I don't know. You can make the argument they're already plotting out, or plotting out the possibility that Austin Theory as a heel is going to be the guy who ends Roman Reigns' reign in 2 to 3 years when Reigns is a babyface. And they might want that moment to build and build and build and build if they are that as high on Theory then as I'm being told they are right now. So I'm just throwing that out there when it comes to people thinking, well, we know it's going to happen, or we know what should happen. The ramifications of whatever they do is not just what will be good for what will make fans happy that night, or what seems like the right decision that week or that month, or even this year. It might have to do with some wider, or it might have to do with the availability of The Rock to face Reigns. And if that's the case, do they want Rock to get the win but not win the title? In that case, you don't want Roman to have the title then. You don't want to have a non-title match. You want Rock versus Reigns, where the outcome isn't a foregone conclusion because people know Rock isn't going to win the championships at this point. So there's so many directions it can go, and the ride is going to be fun. No matter where they, which direction it goes, with all the options that are out there. Cody was not the third choice after Steve Austin. The pitch for Austin was against Brock, and I'll just leave it at that. But the Rock and Roman certainly was something on their radar when they first booked in L.A., WrestleMania in L.A., and that's not unfounded to say that was something that they were thinking about. So anyway, Brandon, anything you want to follow up on, and then I'll go back to Jay.
I was just going to say that I think one of the benefits that Reigns and Cody will have from a storytelling perspective when the match comes around is just that, you know, win or lose for Reigns, I think this is the only time during his entire run where they're going to have a crowd that truly believes it could go either way. Because I think that Reigns has told stories against other opponents well enough to get the crowd invested. But deep down, I don't think there's been an audience that really thought that Reigns was going to lose the title against any opponent. Mm-hmm. Because there haven't been major opponents that felt like legitimate threats to Reigns. I mean, even Sami Zayn, they told a great story, and I think people wanted to believe and probably convinced themselves in the heat of the moment that it was possible. But deep down, if you really ask them, I don't think they thought that Sami Zayn was actually going to win the title. So I think that they've got a really cool opportunity here to create something special where people are going to go into this match very much thinking that Rhodes is either favored to win or that there's a really good chance that he wins. So that gives them something new to play with.
Yes. Yep. Okay, let me throw back to Jay. Jay, your follow-up.
Yeah, man, you guys broke everything down so eloquently. I wanted to touch on a couple things. Brandon, I disagree only with the last comment you made. I feel like this would be the second time that there's a possibility going in. I believe the other time was when he faced Drew McIntyre at Clash of the Castle. That was the only other this entire run that I thought, like, maybe this could be the end. Now, you know, I think one of the first points you made, Brandon, was, like, really my dynamic toward the situation, like, because I feel like the Bloodline, Roman Reigns character and story has been so well told and so well tied together and so well connected that's where I'm like, okay, yeah, Cody has his story and he has his thing that he's bringing to this, but, like, is it truly attached to the Bloodline story? But at the same time, I mean, that's where that whole Jey Uso element comes in. However, I totally agree. Well, not totally agree, but I feel like Cody is the better choice to be the champion. However, I just look at that Bloodline story, like the way it's been told, feels like Cody's a little out of place coming in and, you know, getting an opportunity to do this. But, you know, man, like I said, man, you guys covered everything so well, and I don't think that there's anything that – I feel like they're in a great position, you know what I mean, with whatever way they go. And even with Roman losing, there's so many stories coming outside of this from the Bloodline that you can still tell. And, you know, it all ties together. So, you know, I won't really expound too much more, man. I think you guys really touched and covered everything that I would have liked to discuss. So I thank you all for taking my call, man. And it's a pleasure as always.
Awesome. Thanks, Jey. Always good to hear from you. Appreciate the kind words. All right. Let's keep rolling here. We'll go to Mike in Atlantic City next. If you want to join us live here, if you're listening to our live stream, you still can. 347-215-8558. Push 1 on your keypad or email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Mike, welcome to the show. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
I thought it was really good. You know, I thought it was a pretty newsworthy show. The Roman Cody stuff was excellent. You know, I think it was kind of short like it should have been. I think you guys are right. You know, you could save some other stuff for later down the road. And what you brought up, Wade, I think a few weeks ago, like I think you said you wanted Cody to bring up where Reigns, a lot of times when he wins, he can't win fair. Like there's always got to be interference. You know, there's always got to be a run-in. You know, I think you're right. I think eventually Cody should bring that up, and I hope he does, because if you don't bring that up, I think that's a lost opportunity. I think, you know, that'd be a good jab for Cody to take against Roman sometime in the future. So I hope they go that route at some point and Cody does bring that up, because there has been a lot of matches where there has been a lot of interference. Reigns really didn't win clean. I mean, against Kevin Owens, I guess you could – was that no DQ? Or was the ref just knocked out? I think the ref was just knocked out, right, at the Rumble?
Do you remember, Brandon?
That was – I thought that was, like, no holds barred or something, but maybe it wasn't. I can look.
I mean, technically, I guess he did win clean, but a lot of times he hasn't won clean.
Yeah, I mean –
I hope at some point –
right.
Yeah, at some point they bring that up. But yeah, I mean, if Roman...
Yeah, so here, let me jump in on that, because I wanted to wait till you pause there.
Jump in, yeah.
There is plenty... There's currently plenty of time for Cody to say that. I wonder if WWE is protective of, in more of a, like, you know, behind-the-scenes sense, of weakening Reigns overtly. And like, yes, the facts are the facts. You can watch and see how he wins. But I don't know if they want to draw a ton of attention to that, in part because, you know, it does undercut a little bit what they really emphasize, which is this is this really prestigious 900-plus day reign, and it also calls attention to booking, you know, the booking of finishes. And if you say, you know, that how he wins and the way he goes about it, and you undermine that too much, I can understand a philosophical reason that they wouldn't want to hang a lantern on that, shine a light on it, and tell the story in a different way. I'm not saying that'd be my call. I'm not saying, you know, but I'm trying to, like, just maybe understand or point out why they may choose not to have Cody say those things. It does seem like the natural thing for Cody to say, but it also, in a way, if Cody beats Roman, undercuts a little bit the accomplishment. If Cody is just the first guy to win he's the first guy to win, but everybody else could have won if it weren't for interference, it takes a little bit away from the accomplishment too. So I'm just kind of processing that in my head, and I was when it was brought up earlier. I think there's things Cody can say to Roman that he shouldn't shy away from, which is look at you. You say this about me. Well, you can't even keep your family together. You know, you've got all this on your plate and I've got one focus. I think there's things like that he can slip into promos to get under Reigns' skin, and it fits the storyline. I don't know if saying WWE always books you to finish in a screwy way has more benefit than it does negative.
Oh, okay. I thought Brandon was going to chime in there. Yeah. So we'll see what happens there. I mean, oh, okay. That's what you were shooting for. Okay. Yeah. I hope Cody does bring that up in the future. But yeah, like you said, Wade, maybe it's best to frame it in like a different way or something like that. So Roman Reigns, you know, comes off more like unstoppable, maybe. You know, like he can't be beaten. So maybe they don't want people to think, you know, that Roman Reigns can be beaten and all that. Is that what you were referring to?
Repeat that. I'm not sure what you're asking.
Oh, no. When you said about Cody and Roman, when you said maybe it's best that WWE doesn't bring up or doesn't want, you know, they don't let Cody say how Reigns can – he can win, but
yeah.
He always has to cheat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm saying,
we'll see what happens.
Yeah. So my point is they just,
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. My point is they might have other reasons. They might be steering Cody away from saying that if the goal is to not draw attention to that, because they don't think it serves the story as well as other things that Cody can point out. They want to be sure it's not just glaring weakness that it's not brought up, though, you know, where people are like, oh, why are they hiding that information from us or not hiding the information? Why isn't Cody bringing up the obvious when Reigns is taking these personal shots at him and bringing his dad into it? But, you know, I'm just trying to get into the head of WWE's creative minds and go, why would they not have Cody say something that feels kind of obvious? And it just might be they think it undercuts the larger story they're telling.
Yeah, true. But I mean,
yeah. So what else?
You think Cody and Roman have a rematch at the following pay per view? Let's say like if Roman retains, I wonder if they would do the rematch. Because I could see like if Roman wins, I could see Cody like, because he's saying how it's a need for him to win, like he has to win. And Stone Cold said that the 1 year at WrestleMania when he was facing The Rock that he has to win. And look what happened. You know, he turned heel. You know, I don't see mm-hmm. Cody turning heel. I'm not saying that, but
not yet.
Cody,
not
like,
yet,
if,
yeah.
if he does, not yet, yeah. But if Cody doesn't win, maybe they'll go the route where Cody's like depressed and he doesn't think he has it no more, and he think he let his dad down, and maybe that could lead to a rematch at the following pay per view, or maybe they could just tell the story and that could lead to a big rematch at SummerSlam. If it's at SummerSlam, that's where I could see maybe a double turn. That's when Cody could go heel, maybe.
They're not going to turn Roman face that soon. There's a lot more story to tell. Roman's face turn. I mean, I could be wrong, but
I think we're
a year and a half, 2 years away from Roman turning face. Things are going. There's too many stories to tell with him as a heel. It's working too well. And Cody. I mean, if he turns heel, it's going to be because he has a full-fledged run as a babyface. So, but Brandon, when do you think they do a rematch, regardless of the finish at WrestleMania?
I was kind of looking to see what the next pay-per-view after WrestleMania was, because they've played around with that a bit in recent years, and they don't have it on the schedule yet. So I'm curious as to where it's located, because honestly, that might dictate what they do. In the last couple of years, WWE has not necessarily been shy about not having title matches on what they deem to be like the B or C level pay-per-views, especially if they're not in a major market. And that's sort of what happened last year. WrestleMania Backlash was in Providence, and they went with a six-man tag over a title rematch or a title defense for Roman Reigns. So I could see them going that direction again. If that were the case, I mean, maybe it goes all the way to SummerSlam if they're going to do a rematch, but you've also got Money in the Bank in England. So I think that's probably a prime contender as well to go back to it.
Yeah. Mike, anything else you want to bring up before we move on here?
Real quick, Brandon, they're in Philly, by the way, for WrestleMania next year.
Okay. Oh, no, no, no.
Yeah,
I, they're
in
I
Philly.
Mean, just the
pay-per-view right after.
Immediately after WrestleMania.
Oh, Backlash. Yeah, I think it's Backlash. I'm not sure, actually. Yeah, I'm not sure. I know it's not going to be called WrestleMania Backlash, though. It's going to be just Backlash.
That would be great. Oh, to clarify too, from the earlier conversation, the Kevin Owens Roman Reigns match at Royal Rumble was just a straight up singles, so no stipulation there. They've just gone really heavy on. They just did the ref spot and then they returned to it in the Sammy match too.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay. And I'll touch on the Liv Rhea match. I thought that was a good match. I think it was a solid match. I think the finish was right.
Mm-hmm.
I was glad Rhea did the submission instead of just the pinfall. Like the pinfall and submission, that was great. Makes Rhea look really strong going up against Charlotte. And but I wanted to bring up Liv too. Like Liv, she just has really good matches. She works good with a lot of people, and I don't think it's a scenario where Rhea's carrying Liv or Raquel's carrying Liv. I think Liv holds her own. I think she holds her own in there. I think she can go. I think she can perform well. I know some people love her. Some people don't like her. But I think she's a really good worker and fun to watch in the ring. And I think she's a rising star. I think she'll definitely have another title run. Might not be this year, but, you know, 2 years
right,
from now,
so,
I think she'll have another title run.
So I don't know.
What's your take on that?
I want to get Brandon's thoughts. I think Liv has had her chances, and I think she's going to be a mid-carder. And I think she was fed to Rhea tonight. I thought her promo, the interview they aired with was it Megan Morant, where she like just acted really weird. Like Liv just doesn't know who she is. I mean, her character's all over the place. It's a real struggle for me to get behind her. I think her ring entrance is degrading in the way that she carries herself. I think her character, it feels like there's this constant search. I mean, how many like reintroductions has she had of wildly different ways to portray her? And it just feels like WWE is determined to try to get her over because they see what Mike sees in her. There's something there, but to me, she just seems lost. And I mean, she's competent in the ring. And I don't mean that to sound like an insult. I think it's a compliment. She's competent in the ring. But the character, it's just, I mean, I don't know. It feels like they can't hone in on what she's supposed to be. And then I think sometimes when she tries to be something, it comes across very different. The way that she blew a kiss at Morant, it just, everything about her just feels awkward and sort of desperately lost. Anyway, I said I don't want to bury people throwing to you, Brandon, but I don't get it, and I think she's just a mid-card utility player, and I would keep her around for that reason, but don't overpush her, and please figure out a better ring entrance that actually feels like a professional wrestling entrance and not some other kind of entrance, and a promo, a personality that people can actually, like, relate to. Brandon?
I'm firmly in the middle. So Wade, I definitely see where you're coming from. I completely agree that the character needs a significant amount of work. I think that she had her chance at the top with the title. The title run wasn't particularly impressive. However, I do think that she has a really natural connection with the audience. Now, it doesn't always translate incredibly well, and I think that is because the character is, like you said, so all over the place. But there is something with her and the audience. People genuinely like her, and she seems to genuinely love and appreciate the fans and what she's doing out there on a week-to-week basis, and I think that is important. I also think one thing to look out for with Liv and her potential longevity within the company, if you pay attention to some of the Be a Star campaigns, some of the work that they do in the communities they visit, some of the events they hold at schools, she is a mainstay in all of those events. She is the female equivalent of The Miz when it comes to community involvement within that company right now. And that is huge. And that goes a very long way in making you valuable to that company. she has clearly put herself in a place where she is in the good graces of many, many people, and I think that that will certainly serve her. I was actually just – I was watching the 30-minute documentary that they did on Sami Zayn leading up to Elimination Chamber, and Sami went and spoke at a high school in Montreal, and lo and behold, guess who his partner for the day was? Liv Morgan. She's everywhere. They utilize her for those community events, and I think that says a lot about how they feel about her. So, I'm higher on her than you are, Wade, but I don't see her as being a person who should perennially be in the main event or at the top of the women's division unless they can get that character figured out.
All right, very good. I will throw back to Mike just for any reaction to that, and then we'll move on.
Yeah, Brandon, that's what I was going to say. That's why I think she's a rising star. She's like a really good spokesperson for WWE. That's one reason why I see her as a star sometime in the future. Not this year, but I think either next year or the following year, she'll have, I think she'll be possibly in the title picture again. I don't know if you got to turn her heel. You might have to turn her heel and try that out. I don't know what you got to do to freshen her character up, but if they can do that, then I think she could be, a big star in a couple years.
Yes, Mike.
Go ahead, Wayne.
Mike, that's the problem. That's the problem is how many things have they tried with her? Like, that's where I'm losing faith. I mean, there's a lot going for her, but the track record is try this. Half the time she comes across as heel. I thought tonight she came across obnoxious with Megan. I hope they can make it work.
Yeah.
I do, but man, it's been bumpy.
Make her go full heel.
Yeah.
Make her go full heel.
Yeah.
All right. Later this year.
Yeah. I'm for giving that a try because I want to see something with her stick. But so far, I'll use the word. I think she's cringy almost all the time in terms of her character work. From
in
ring entrance to promos to her reactions. To her, her facial reactions in the ring. I mean, it just feels out of step with what her intentions are, and I think that's a problem to work on. I'm not rooting against her. I'm not her mom. I'm not like soft pedaling my criticism of her. She's put herself out there. She's making money as a public figure, and I don't think it's working. I think it's been a cringy struggle. Not all her fault because some of the booking obviously is to blame. But anyway.
Twitter headline, Wade hates Liv Morgan. Everyone,
but
go ahead.
But I don't know. Can you be that spokesperson? Can you be that spokesperson and be heel, though? That's the only thing. I mean, The Miz is technically, I guess it could work.
Yeah.
Right. That's what I was thinking.
I mean, Cody didn't.
It used to be, so.
Cody didn't want to turn heel because he wanted to do all his work outside of the ring. Your job in WWE, first and foremost, is to be the biggest attraction you can be on TV and at live events. And if that means they put someone else in your spot to do, personal appearances, so be it. That's just, a little supplementary side gig. And even if you love doing it and you're eager to do it, I'm not saying WWE management might think, let's not turn her because she's too valuable and no one else wants to do all that stuff. But that should not stop you if you think a heel turn is going to turn her into a star. Then you pull her from those personal appearances. And it's no big deal. You send Tegan Nox instead or whoever, and everybody will be fine at those personal appearances. All right, Mike, thanks. Always good hearing from you.
Thanks a lot, guys. Yep, it's fun.
Yep, you bet. Up next, Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. We already heard from him by DM. Thanks, Sean, for your help on the description of the Fatal 5-Way next week. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind about SmackDown otherwise?
Yeah, it's always good to talk to you, Wade. You're the man. Brandon, it's always good to talk to you, man. How are you, sir?
Good. How are you?
Oh, man, doing well. I want to get on the Liv real quick since we're just kind of bringing up. Brandon, again, I'm with you as far as, she can do all that stuff away from the ring, but again, it doesn't. But I'm with Wade overall. I just think she's not good at her character, and that overall is what should matter. Like I know WWE focuses on, oh, she can do all this stuff for the company, and that's okay. We're not dismissing that as that's bad. That's really, really good. We're acknowledging that and saying, okay, you can do that. But in the character, stop shaking your boobs around and stop doing all that stuff to make you look bad in that sense. And that's what I think Wade and I are coming from. Like, yeah, she's good in the ring. She's gotten a lot better in the last year, but she's not, I'm with you. She's a mid-carder at best. I don't see star. I just don't. I'm sorry. I mean, I'm the same way. I'm not voting against her to succeed. Well, I mean, I know, Wade, you're with me. We don't want her to not succeed. We just want to say, in a wrestling character perspective, you need to do better. And she needs to do better, period, end of story. And I think if she does, then a star could happen. And I think, Wade, are you with me? We'd be open to that in 2 years. If she's shown that, then fine. Be that. That's okay.
She's done nothing to disqualify herself from being a potential star. But we can't just say because of what she does outside of the ring or because I think she's whatever. You know, like, there's clearly issues that need addressing. And her ring entrance, again, I just think it's patronizing / degrading and needs to change. It's just out of step with a professional athlete going to the ring to fight. And I think it's just embarrassing, honestly. And her promos, yeah, I don't want to dunk on her some more. There's work to be done there. And it's not fair to her to pretend that there isn't. There's work to be done. And she might not have it, and then it's up to WWE to go, you know what, she has so many other traits we like. As Mike says, turn her heel, or let's frame her in a completely different way. But my God, if you could do a pretty long article detailing all the different ways she's been framed and the announcers talk about her and how she's come across on promos and,
right,
you know, what the story they try to tell with her. And it is all over the place and nothing sticks, and nothing she's done. Does anyone regret that they moved on from, because everything she's done as a character has been there's been a reason they moved on to something else because it hasn't clicked. So anyway, I want to move on.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't want to belabor.
And I'll say too, like, the match was good. The match was fine, and it made. I was going back to Rhea again. I think they're on the right track with her. You know, of course, the question is, we'll be going through more of the Rhea Charlotte feud. You know, is it going to be hurt her, or is it going to hurt Charlotte? There's a chance of them cheering Rhea more than Charlotte, and we'll have to see when they get there. But as far as her right now, Rhea's coming across as a star. Like, she just looks just fantastic right now by what she's doing. And Wade, I want to disagree. I know I wanted to get back, and I'm glad they brought it up with Sheamus, McIntyre, and all that. I'm with you as far as they haven't done the people coming out one after the other. And I think they did, like you said, tell a good story of kind of why they were doing it. But I just don't like fatal five ways determining a contender for them. I just think you need to tell better stories overall. Like, get the one or two people. If you're going to go even a triple threat, which I think they should have done, I don't know who's going to win this, which is, I like the match as far as I don't know who's going to win, which that's good. But as far as, I think they should tell a story with one or two people. You have a month left. You could have pulled a decent enough story. And Gunther was right with what he said as far as, I don't have a worthy challenger. And technically, he's kind of right, because that's what they're doing. They're making it sound like, oh, we're just going to put five guys together. Maybe there's a story behind some of it. You're just going to have a five-way match to determine who's going to face him. Like, I just don't like when they do that kind of crutch. What do you think about that? Am I kind of off base, or what do you think about that theory?
Well, it's not my favorite. I mean, it's definitely not my favorite way to to determine who's going to get a match at WrestleMania, to have a bunch of people just walk out there and then you create a five-way. And yeah, it'd be great if there was just a singular challenger. And frankly, if they had just had Drew win a couple matches on TV and had whoever else, someone else win a couple matches on TV, could even be Kofi. And then Adam Pearce, you know, Gunther goes, I am insulted. I need a worthy opponent. And Pearce just says, you know what? I've got two wrestlers in mind who have been winning their matches lately. And they both have a desire to be Intercontinental Champion. They're going to face each other, and the winner gets a shot. Mm-hmm. I would live with that. And you can do Kofi versus Drew. You can do Karrion Kross against Drew. You can do Sheamus against Drew. And I'm not – I shouldn't assume Drew's going to be the guy against Gunther, but, I mean, I think he's a leading contender based on how WWE,
right,
you know, tends to build these things up. So, Brandon, what do you think?
Yeah, I know that triple threat matches are not usually the match of choice. And I agree with that premise. Generally speaking, I prefer a well-built one-on-one feud. But for my own personal enjoyment, I'm going to be a little bit selfish here. I want Gunther, Sheamus, Drew McIntyre in a triple threat at WrestleMania because I want to see these three guys chop the living hell out of each other for 12 to 15 minutes. And I think it will be so much fun. I'm gonna use Big E's famous clip that made the rounds this week again, which I absolutely love, where, you know, he talks about we all love five-star classics and all this stuff, but really what wrestling is all about is big men slapping meat. And he does it in a way that, you know, you can't help but just have a huge smile on your face. But that's what I want. I want that triple threat match. I think it'll be fantastic. So I wish it was just Sheamus and Drew out there, and Gunther came out and said, "Give me both of them. I'll take them both."
Yes.
But yes. I'm fine with getting to it. Whatever way they get to it, if that's the direction. I think Sheamus has had too good of a year to be left off the card, and that's kind of why I feel like there's no other place for him. He kind of has to fit in to this story. So, I hope that's the direction that they're going. I'm fine if they get to it with this five-way, and then Sheamus is put in later or Drew's put in later, however they want to do it. I think ultimately, you know, it comes down to they need a big match to advertise for next week, and you know, determining the number one contender for the Intercontinental title is a solid hook. So,
okay, so Brandon, you made me angry, and I'm not saying I was tempted.
I knew it.
But I do have a second part to all this. The idea that there's a couple things that made me angry. One, suggesting a triple threat, because Drew against Gunther one-on-one is so appealing. And they can do Sheamus against Gunther one-on-one. But so adding a third person means, okay, so they're going to stand in the ring and, like, chop each other in a circle? Or we're going to have a contrived situation where one guy knocks the other guy out of the ring and he stays there for 3 minutes when in every match they get up right away? I don't know how these three tough guys, like, how you tell that story without it looking contrived. There's plenty of time to have Sheamus get his match against him. And the idea that, well, Sheamus earned it. It's like the argument against giving titles out. There was this era that I think we're past now, in part thanks to Roman, where, well, why didn't this guy get a world title run? He had a good long career. It's like the gold watch thing. It's like, no, very few people should get to be world champion. And you should never do a title change or even add someone to a WrestleMania match because they had a good year. Like they should be in a WrestleMania match because it fits on the card and there's a natural match for them. So I say all that, but the caveat's coming up. I get it in the sense that Sheamus and Drew are so intertwined as enemies and as partners and friends who are willing to go to war. And if you were to have a triple threat match for the IC title, I do, with all my reservations and not buying into the reasoning that it should be done because Sheamus had a good year and he deserves a WrestleMania match. Because, boy, when you go down that road, we're in hour number six and there's little girls crying because they haven't seen Charlotte yet. So let's not have that be the reason. But if you make the case, if we're going to have a triple threat for the Intercontinental title, and then we have the dumb thing too, which, oh, there's no rules. So then you're going to have Imperium, like, interfering with tasers and brass knuckles and baseball bats. Because, hey, when we add a third person to a match, we have no choice but to allow everything to be legal, which makes the baby faces look like complete idiots for not bringing a knife to the match. So it hits all kinds of pet peeves of mine. That said, if you said, Wade, there's going to be a triple threat for Gunther at WrestleMania for the IC title, who do you want in it? But yeah, it is going to be a triple threat. Make it the best you can. I'd say Sheamus and Drew. So there we go.
Okay, so first, I don't want them to tell the story that Sheamus deserves it. I'm just saying I personally don't want to see the WrestleMania card without Sheamus because he's had such a great year.
Right, but that opinion of people in power has led to a lot of problems. That's
I know. I know. deferring to logic, I completely agree. Sheamus is better left out of the situation. I like the idea of Gunther versus Drew McIntyre, but I want to see Drew McIntyre and Sheamus and Gunther.
Yes. Absolutely. No, I get it.
Except there is one caveat to that. You did spoil my fun a little bit, because now I'm thinking about Imperium and the Brawling Brutes getting involved, and I don't want that.
Stop, Brandon.
Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah.
Don't.
I don't know if we can avoid it. what else, Sean?
I wanted to say too, and the Intercontinental title's been so built up in such a good way this year that I want them to just tell a good story with the title. You know what I'm saying? I just don't like the five-way, like I just put them in a match. I don't know. That I didn't like. But nobody's talked about this, and I'm really surprised. Well, first I want to say, and I'll talk about something else at the end, but so I'm torn on this segment, guys, because this show was really good, by the way. This is one of the best SmackDowns in a while, honestly. Very good. With Dominic Mysterio and – so, okay. I hope Zach in Texas emailed you, Wade. Please tell me he emailed you. I want to hear his email so bad. I love him, but I want to hear his email. Dominic had a very decent match tonight. I thought it was very decent. People think he's bad in the ring. Yeah, he's not great in the ring, but he's passable for a heel. He's passable. He's decent. And the match was good tonight. I really thought the match was good for what it was. I was still torn because I know they're doing the stuff with Dom and Ray, which they're going to go to. Eventually, Ray's going to snap. I love the way they're telling that story. That's really good. Oh, Dom's so good in that role. Ray's great in his role. Rey Mysterio's just one of the best to ever do it. But I still don't like Santos getting beat. I know Rhea attacked him during the match, and that's the out they're going with. So he was protected in a way. And that's fine. I just wish he would not get pinned. I feel like he's gotten pinned a little bit more than I would like. Now, the question is, do they think that high of Santos where they want him in this big of a spot later on? And that's where I think maybe the issue is, well, Dominic, they're just telling such a good story with Dom and Ray. That's kind of where they're going. And if they do, that's fine. So what did you think about the whole segment, Santos losing, Dom and Ray? I want you to talk about that because I just love what they're doing with Dom and Ray right now.
Yeah, Dom is so fun. Santos Escobar losing to him under any circumstances. I mean, it's sort of like, with Kofi and LA Knight last week, and people have said that Knight did the job because they thought LA Knight had been gaining some traction. There was definite interference. He was very protected in the way that WWE rationalizes. Having somebody lose but going, well, it doesn't really count because of what we did. And there's a level of consistency to their approach that I think the fan base does account for that when they decide whether this defines someone down. Having Dominic be as over as he is or as valuable and entertaining as he is, along with Ripley, giving him some sort of a win now and then, I guess they could go the other direction, but I think it's okay to give him a win now and then. And I don't know. Yeah, I wasn't outraged by it, but I certainly raised an eyebrow like you, Sean. I mean, it was like, oh, okay, that tells us – it certainly tells the viewership something about him, because they're not going to have Gunther lose due to, interference. They're not going to have – there's just wrestlers who are protected at a certain level, and this does reveal to us that Escobar is not, but I don't think everybody should be protected at that level. So, the conundrum is, they're in the business of telling stories, not just doing a sports-like experience, and they make that choice. And sometimes they go too far. Very often they go too far with distraction finishes and interference and all that. So, I mean, it's not like giving them a free pass on it, but I think in the context of how they do it, this didn't feel like a burial, and I think the WWE, viewers kind of know that this wasn't a burial, and it – so I don't think it's like this huge setback for what the trajectory Santos was on. I'll put it that way. What do you think, Brandon?
Yeah, this was one that I raised an eyebrow to, but I also didn't – it didn't surprise me all that much because, really, Legado del Fantasma, unfortunately, hasn't been presented with much fanfare. And the presentation of Santos Escobar has been a little confusing over the last few weeks. I mean, Legado was a clear heel faction under the tutelage of Zelina Vega. They didn't turn babyface, but quite suddenly Escobar was friendly with Rey Mysterio and receiving a mask from him. And now suddenly he's more or less working in a babyface role, and the rest of the faction has disappeared, or at least are, have been shifted to the background. They weren't even there at all tonight. So it's been strange, the story that they're telling with Escobar and having him be this sort of mentee in a way to Rey Mysterio. I don't love Dominic beating him, but I also don't think that it sends any definitive message that Escobar can't be something in the future. I think really what it comes down to is that we're in WrestleMania season, and as they like mm-hmm. to remind us yep. very frequently, and
as they should.
Yeah. Dominic is involved in a major storyline and Santos isn't. So it's important to get your guys who are going to be prominently featured, presumably on the card, in positions where they're winning and they're gaining victories and gaining momentum. So I don't think it's a huge deal in the grand scheme of things. And I also, Sean, to your point, you said, you know, Dominic was fine tonight. He was pretty good. I think that's really like an added benefit to his character, because if Dom was a really good wrestler, I don't think that what he's doing would work. I mean, the idea that everything that Dom does is ridiculously hyperbolic is exactly why he's so much fun and why he's so over. The idea that, you know, he thinks he's this great wrestler who can outsmart and beat, you know, opponents who are far wiser and more experienced than him, when everyone watching knows that isn't the case, isn't very different than, you know, him trying to convince the audience that he's a hardened criminal that spent a bunch of time in prison. So I think the mediocre in-ring ability is actually playing very much to his advantage right now.
Yeah, well put. Sean, what else for us?
Yeah, so a few little things. The first I actually wanted to bring up, Wade, I know you're probably thinking the same thing, and I'm assuming he's just, you know, got some issue or, you know, going to work and having to get up, you know, early in the morning or something. But I really miss Nick in Brattleboro. I hope he's doing okay. I know he doesn't get on social media, obviously, so there's no way to get a hold of him or see how he's doing. But I hope he's doing good. Nick, if you're listening, man, we hope you're doing all right. I love his calls on here. I miss him a lot, actually. I love hearing his thoughts on the shows, and I love all the callers we have now. But Nick's one of the guys I really miss, and so I just want to bring that up too. The one other thing I did not like was we saw Shayna not get her entrance last week again, and then this week again, you know, Ronda's music played, but then for Tegan to not have her own music, like, come on, guys, like, if we're trying to have other people wrestle, like, let's at least have their entrance music. Like, let's not have Natalya or Tegan come out to Natalya's entrance music. Like, I wish they'd get away from that. I don't like that they've been doing that lately. And then, like you said, just going back to the Cody Roman real quick, I'm with you guys completely. I just, anybody that, you know, says Cody got eviscerated or this, that's crazy. Like, that was a great segment. It was a great segment. Roman played his part fantastic. Cody did what he should have done, and like you guys were saying, there's plenty of time to build Cody to give longer promos. He's going to do that in the next couple weeks. So I like where their story's going, and I love when Roman, in the backstage segments, like throughout the show, was like, if Jimmy can't get Jay on the right page, it's on Jimmy now. Like, I just – Roman's just the best heel by far. MJF's great, but Roman is just amazing. So I just want to throw all those things out there, see what you guys thought about those things, and – Wade, you're the best. I love Todd this week on The Fix. Like, just the shortest answers ever, but I still loved it. I just loved it.
Wait until you hear.
Watch that show.
Sean, I shouldn't step on you when you're saying nice things, but wait till you hear this week's mailbag. By the way, for people, VIP members wondering, Todd was under the weather, and he just couldn't go on. His voice couldn't go on, so he started the mailbag. And he had such, a top five rant, an all-time top five rant, and it ruined his voice. He like hit pause. He came back. He's never done this before that I can recall. He's like, we need to record later. He went to the show tonight, by the way. So next time we record, we'll get his thoughts on the show. But it is a rant, and it is a rant about the results of the Wrestling Observer Year-End Awards, which were a bit of a fiasco this year. Nodding a lot. Todd. Ridiculous results. Todd has a rant about that. And we got a lot more mailbag to record. That'll be coming up soon. We're not sure when his voice will be recovered enough. We might find out from our on-site correspondent how Todd's doing, by the way. He's on hold. So I'm just throwing that out there. It go VIP, everybody. You got to hear the fix every week. But as Sean is saying, but especially his mailbag rant about the Observer Awards is I feel guilty even sitting on it for 24 hours here. But we just don't have the mailbag done yet.
Wait.
I was like, I don't want to put it up in a few segments. So
wait, I want to bring something up too real quick. I didn't get to, and I felt bad. So Jason Powell, you know, obviously one of the best in the business. I was on his Pro Boom Wrestling Boom Live after Elimination Chamber, and I'm actually going to get to be on after Revolution Monday too. So I just wanted to plug that because obviously Jason does a great job, and I'm thankful he's allowed me to be on that show with him and do some of that stuff and just talk to him about wrestling too. So that's a lot of fun. I hope people get to listen to that. AEW is going to be a fun show, but Wade, Brandon, I appreciate you guys taking my call. You guys are the best.
Thank you very much. Jason, I mean, I'm biased because he's one of my best friends and I've known him predating the torch, and he's worked for me. We've worked together. He does the flagship for years. But when I see people talk about who the best wrestling reporters and analysts are of this generation of multi-generation, I mean, he's one of the most tenured wrestling reporters and he's not on the list. I just shake my head. And he's got a huge following and has earned it, but there's people who, for whatever reason, sometimes don't include him, and he just quietly goes about doing stellar work with top-level integrity and objectivity, and his body of work just stands up to anybody. And if you're not subscribing to his free podcast, Pro Wrestling Boom, you got a phone in your hand right now. Search Pro Wrestling Boom on your podcast app and subscribe and listen. It's good stuff. I just admire Jason so much, and I think he should people who don't know the work that he does, for whatever reason, go to his website, prowrestling.net, and subscribe to his podcast. So there. All right. And he'll be on the flagship with me in the next couple of weeks. So you can, you're probably familiar with him anyway from that. If not, check it out. All right. Thank you, Sean. And now we're going to go to our on-site correspondent who's on hold. Dave, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling in. Eager to hear what it was like in the building tonight. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Hey, Wade. Hey, Brandon. I just also want to say I'm a fan of your work on The Torch. And, Wade, I've subscribed
Thanks
to
so much.
For 35 years now, so since I was a teenager. But I also have to,
awesome.
I don't know if apologize or take credit for the mailbag question that sent Todd over the top. That was my question.
Oh, you're not going to be disappointed. You're not going to be disappointed.
He told me in advance. He said, your troublemaking question is going to get the desired effect. And he also told me that.
Totally.
He had to stop recording the mailbag after he went on the rant. But he is doing much better. And, you'll talk to him. And
Todd is moving. He texted and he said Michael Cole got a great response. And Michael Cole should have won announcer of the year last year, by the way. Michael Cole, I mean, his reaction. No, it's not a laugh line. Michael Cole is really, really good, and he is better than the people who won. And tonight he was on. I mean, he's just so spot on SmackDown, telling stories, reacting appropriately. Last week on Rampage, we had an Eric Rowe's like, oh, it's a nitpick. No, it's not Eric. There was a baseball bat assault backstage, and then they go to Excalibur, and he goes, let's go to a sponsored plug for gambling. It's like Michael Cole sees outrages happen on tonight's show and he can barely hold it together. That's how you should act. It's the Mick Carr school of announcing. You got to immerse yourself in the world. And if you don't react like it's real life, you're going to all the emotional investment that the potential viewers have is going to evaporate. Cole just keeps getting better. And so anyway, that's all. Another topic, but did Todd deny that he cheered? And Dave, I just want to know, did he cheer? Did he boo? Did he not react when Cole got a nice ovation?
He did not react to Michael Cole.
Todd.
Yeah, I mean, he is a journalist. He's an analyst. He should.
Yeah. he really does. He stays deadpan most of the time. I think there's a bit of reaction.
Yes, I know. I've had to show him. Yes.
So, do you have any questions in particular, or it was
I love this first
show.
Of all, you love SmackDown tonight?
Yeah, I had a great time.
Is that what you said? Yeah.
Good.
So absolutely, my first question for you, Dave, is talk about the reaction in house to the Bloodline coming out. I don't think there's anybody, any act in wrestling history that milks their ring entrance and their first words on the microphone like Roman does. And it seems like it works. I want you to talk about that experience. And then part two, talk about the Cody interruption and how the crowd reacted to Cody. And on television, it seemed as if the crowd was behind Cody. There was a little Cody chant that kind of faded pretty quick, but that's when Cody's about to start talking. There was another one that was louder later. It seemed like the crowd on television was very willing to be behind Cody Rhodes. And normally you wouldn't even draw that much attention to it except for his track record in AEW. And, you know, it's just a little unpredictable with Roman because he has been cheered at times. Going back a few months, it seemed like the wave was going towards cheering him, and they've pushed back. They've strategically, just like MJF and AEW, really wanted to get fans booing him again. So talk about both of those aspects of that opening segment.
It's a really fascinating thing to me because I haven't been to a WWE show since before the pandemic, since before AEW, and it's a different audience now. This is a more docile crowd, and at least in our section, it was filled with kids who were very aware of the storyline and the wrestlers. So, yeah, the Bloodline comes out, and it is a babyface pop. I mean, it's huge for Roman.
Mm-hmm.
He gets into the ring, and then you start getting – some of the kids are yelling, Roman sucks. You know, and but it was, I would say, the biggest pop of the night, aside from maybe Sami Zayn, which is also very interesting because clearly Sami was more over than Cody. But there was not any pushback against Cody. Cody comes out, he gets cheered, he gets there's a Cody chant, and I'm a troublemaker, so I try to start a Sami chant, which I think, you know, 5 years ago, I think would have picked up a little. Nobody did. People love, people laugh.
Wow.
Yeah, I was the only one. Sammy. That's like you caused trouble. And, but
yeah, totally.
They were with Cody, but, and wait, you pointed this out too. I mean, they're with Cody, but he's not super over. And the one thing I noted in particular, it was, I think the big line is, sometimes it was a little hard to hear the audio, but when Cody says, I have to beat you at WrestleMania, that's the big line, right? You look at the pop, it got a pop, but it was not a huge pop, and it was nothing compared to Sammy's pop later. But the crowd was not at all interested in trying to force Sammy into the storyline at all, and they were on Cody's side. It just wasn't overwhelming.
That's very interesting, and it's fun seeing you be a troublemaker and attempt to be a newsmaker and turn the tide against Cody, and it's failing. It's really, and that goes to my point earlier in the show, and I made it with Brandon that I think the Cody storyline and the Sammy storyline are coexisting next to each other. I don't think having Cody address Sammy or Sammy address Cody really serves the storyline because I think Cody is very focused on being sort of prim, proper, dignified, confident, level-headed. Reigns, you throw all this stuff at me, and I'm going to shake your hand and say, may the best man win. And that rattled Roman because Cody didn't feel like he had to fire back. Sometimes the best response to something that where someone's desperately trying to get a reaction out of you and get under your skin is to act unaffected by it. And Cody sort of did. He sort of, whatever, okay. You know, if that's the case, I just have to beat you. I thought that worked. And then you got Sammy who shows up, you know, he's wandering around the concourse and ranting into his phone. And then he shows up disheveled and for his match and jumps into the ring before the bell and attacks. And he's like on this mission because of the mental games that the Bloodline have played with him. And it's finally clicking. He finally flipped the switch and said, no more. I see them for what they are. I look back at what I did and I and how they treated me, and I just want to tear this place apart. They both have such different missions right now that, you know, I think they can peripherally admire what the other is doing, but not feel that they're stepping on each other's toes, in part because Sammy, you know, could have said, hey, I want a rematch given what happened. But Sammy's main goal right now isn't winning a championship. It's dissolving the Bloodline. And I think that's understandable given the backstory. Brennan, what do you think? And then after that, go ahead and throw to Dave with a question about his experience tonight.
Yeah, I think it's a really, really interesting point to hear that, you know, the crowd is firmly with Cody, but it isn't overwhelming. I think that is a really important distinction and something that, like you mentioned, I don't think 4 or 5 years ago is something we would have seen at all. I think it was sort of the crowd's way or the highway. And I think, like you said, docile is probably the right word for it. They are much more willing to accept what WWE is giving them so long as they don't view it as egregious. And clearly they view Cody as an acceptable opponent, even if they may like Sami Zayn a little bit more. The one thing that I definitely wanted to touch on that we haven't talked about yet, and I want to get your perspective from the live audience, talk about the Bobby Lashley segment and kind of what the crowd's reaction was to the potential of seeing Bray Wyatt instead getting Uncle Howdy, all that kind of stuff.
So there were some We Want Bray chants, but not a lot. The one segment where, like, Lashley is sort of in the tweener role right now, so I don't want to say that the crowd wasn't docile, but the crowd was heavily pro Bobby Lashley. And that was actually, I started a Bobby chant that did get going at that point when he was fighting with Uncle Howdy, with, you know. So this hocus pocus stuff starts and it disappears. And actually, Lashley was getting cheered as he left, and he seemed to really enjoy it too. So, yeah, I would say, and, you know, I'm sure Bray would have gotten huge ovation, but I think at least in our section, the crowd was with Lashley, certainly over Howdy. Lashley was the babyface in that segment to the crowd.
Well, again, when you attack somebody from behind, yeah, when you attack somebody from behind like that, you would hope the intent is for them to be the heel. But going into this week, I wouldn't have told you, I wouldn't have been confident, and I'm still not, of what WWE, how WWE wants the crowd to react. You know, I mean, how do you define Bray as a babyface or heel? And then Lashley went from, you know, I thought clearly trying to be the heel in the Lesnar, in the build to the Lesnar match, to now they're kind of flipping him back to where he was. And unfortunately, his character has been all over the place too, not to the degree of Liv Morgan over the last couple of years, but Lashley is, yeah, it's very circumstantial how they portray him, and I think it damages him.
Wade, did you guys talk about Liv Morgan and how much she got against Rhea tonight? Because I wasn't with that. I mean, Rhea's going into WrestleMania. She's going to probably close out night one. And then she has what I thought was too long a match and gave way too much offense to Liv Morgan, who, you know, I mean, I guess she's improved, but that's faint praise.
Yeah, I mean, Liv has been in title contention, and she's held her own against Becky and other top-flight talent. I'm fine with her losing in 8 minutes. You know, I mean, I don't – there wasn't it wasn't a tainted finish, right? Morgan just got in her fall with sort of a Meteora-type move, and then Ripley just landed a Riptide. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, she lost clean, awesome. But, yeah, I was okay with it.
And Brandon, you too? I just thought she was getting a lot of
awesome. Yeah. Yeah, it was fine. It was fine with me, but I understand, you know, wanting the strong showing for Rhea Ripley. I think the reason that they probably gave her a little bit more than you might have expected is just because they advertised the match fairly heavily going in. It was I think the one thing that they were really pushing going into the show outside of the Roman and Cody confrontation. So I'm not too surprised that they gave it a little bit of time.
Cool. Let me touch on a few other things.
Go ahead, Dave.
So LA Knight, you know, considering his level of push, this guy's pretty over. And I also wanted to note that as he was coming to the as he's coming to the ring, I don't know if it was if they were cutting back and forth between his entrance and what was going on in the ring, but I just found it a little interesting if they didn't, that Drew and Sheamus continued to argue in the ring. Brings a level
of
believability.
Off mic.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah. It's like after the fix when we stop recording, Todd, and I still argue.
And, okay, here's one thing, and I think Todd will probably discuss it too, because I mentioned it to him, and he you'll see what he says about it. And I don't even know if you're aware this is going on, but I don't know, halfway through or an hour and 15 minutes during one of the commercial breaks, they start this, like, BX little video segment where they encourage the audience to crotch chop. They encourage kids. I mean, it's like 1997 Redux. A bunch, like 8-year-olds, 5-year-olds, crotch chopping. And then they finish this thing after like 3 minutes. You see, throughout the audience, it's a bunch of kids crotch chopping with encouragement from WWE. And then we have two words for you. Suck it. And like, I'm not offended. I'm just finding it interesting in the PG environment that this is going on. I'm like, really? And I had no idea it had been. Were you aware of this? Is this something that happens every show?
I have not heard of that before. No, I don't think any outside correspondents brought that up before. I mean, to me, that's nothing compared to when I was at a WWF house show over 3 decades ago, and the Bushwhackers were against the Beverly Brothers.
Oh.
And the Bushwhackers led the crowd, including a bunch of families with kids, in the anti-gay F-word slur chants aimed at the Beverly Brothers. And I was just like, are you kidding me? And I mean, I don't care what era you're in. No, it was like nothing will ever. So yeah, this seems like a kind of a weird thing. Things have been worse. But I have not heard of them doing that before. I mean, yeah. Yeah, I wonder how many like kids even like are associating that in any way with how it was originally sort of intended. But
yeah, I wonder if they're like getting to the point where WWE is trying to co-opt it to a point that it doesn't mean what it really means anymore, and it's just a thing you do in wrestling.
Yeah,
but fuck, it's gotta still mean whatever. Gotta that. I mean,
I was
I was taken aback by it. I was like, "What year is it?"
Like, if you're a 7-year-old and you're there with your family and you do that, and then when you like turn whatever, you know, it depends on if you have a big brother or something or not, or an older friend, but like you turn 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, whatever age it is, and you're like, "Wait a second, my parents let me do that?" Like, you know, once it kind of clicks what it is, I could imagine the kids going, Mom, Dad, I got to have a talk with you about something from a few years ago. Anyway.
But yeah, big...
So, go ahead, Dave, with any other observations. Sorry, Dave, go ahead. Yeah, if anything else stood out.
I'm sorry. Is Rhonda injured?
I don't know. What made you say that?
Well, she had a sling on tonight.
Oh God! You know what? That's so weird. I was just typing. I didn't even notice that, which is not good. But yeah, I was so focused on the action in the ring. I'll say. Apparently, I mean, is she selling something?
I mean, to me, it doesn't make sense, because why do the bait and switch? Yeah. Like just advertise. You know, Shayna's going to wrestle tonight. You know, I feel like she must have gotten hurt, but.
Yeah.
Oh, did they say that Ronda was wrestling?
I think the match was supposed to be Ronda, right? Wasn't Ronda supposed to wrestle tonight against what's her name? Tegan Nox? Wasn't the match advertised as Ronda against Tegan?
Oh, I think you're right. Yeah, I forgot all about that.
And then Todd told me, and I missed it, that I just taken out in the back. Like, she was apparently attacked in a 10-second segment. Because then all of a sudden, I'm
yeah, they did the backstage angle. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I was just wondering.
I mean, they explained it away on commentary. They said that, you know, basically that Shayna was getting payback for Ronda for them injuring her arm. But I wasn't sure if it was at the time. I thought it was purely story because I had forgotten that Ronda wanted to face Tegan last week.
That's right. So Sean from Tennessee just messaged and said, yeah, it's supposed to be either a tag match or Tegan versus Ronda.
Yeah, yeah.
I looked at our preview from earlier today that Zach Hadorn put up, and we didn't have that either match listed. So WWE must have pulled it earlier and then, you know, made a decision on what to do. But I don't recall them addressing it on commentary as a switch, but they did that backstage angle, you know, the brawl, I guess, to explain it. So, yeah, I got to go back and rewatch that to kind of pick up on it better.
It definitely was supposed to be Tegan and Ronda because I just recalled that the Skittles line from last week. Ronda challenged Tegan and had that Skittles line about her hair. So that was the match at some point.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, and then we did get the we got the advertised dark match. Actually got two dark matches after SmackDown. We got Charlotte against Sonya Deville and Cody against Balor. And Cody against Balor was actually advertised. So I know you like to keep track of that. So
yeah, talk about it. Yeah, talk about both of those matches.
Well, they were dark matches. That's all I can say.
Right, yeah.
You know, before the matches started, Todd's like, I had to corroborate, you know, so you'd believe him that he picked those two. But he picked them correctly, believe it or not. Yeah, Charlotte went over and Cody went over. I think Charlotte against Sonya was actually probably slightly better from what it was a little hard for me to see a lot of the action in the ring. But Cody Balor, especially Balor, seemed to not have his working shoes on, sort of like that Randy Savage rep when the cameras are off. I don't need to do too much. And I don't blame him either, actually. And they delivered a really great SmackDown. So even, you know, giving us two dark matches after SmackDown, it's like crazy. I don't think they had to. You know, I was wondering if they sort of base their dark matches on how much they provide to the audience during SmackDown. But,
because I mean, Sami Solo is a solid main event. I don't think fans would walk out of the building going, "Oh, we had to end with a Sami Zayn bloodline match." Like they could have gotten away with it. Yeah,
think so.
Good point. How full was the building?
I think that it was packed. It was packed, and I think Todd showed me something. I think it was the biggest gate ever in DC for WWE.
Wow.
But I could be wrong about that. But it was packed. I think Todd was telling me you couldn't even get any secondary tickets at some point. And yeah, it was almost sold.
That's right.
And
yeah.
It was, and I could understand why. I mean, they delivered. They brought Cody. Roman Reigns is going to be there. So, you know, it was really, really great night. And I don't know if you have any other questions. I was on board. I was more on board with I don't want to say I'm not tribal. Great wrestling is great wrestling, but I'm a little more down on AEW these days, as a lot of us are, and a little more up on WWE, especially with what I've considered Bloodline Sammy's storyline. I think, Wade, you've said the same thing pretty much. I think it's the best storyline, long-term storyline in wrestling history.
I do not want to classify it. It's sort of like who's in the Hall of Fame. Let's talk 5 years after they retire. Unless it's just obvious top tier, you know, Michael Jordan-esque or whatever. But we'll circle back and talk about that when there's a little bit of distance between this and it happening. But it's in contention. I mean, it's so hard to compare one era to another. And, you know, people who watch the territory days are going to have their biases, and I'm going to love the Crusher Blackwell Bruiser Brody feud, or, you know, like, I mean, there's going to be, you know, everybody's going to have their favorite and from whatever era they grew up in. This is going to be in every conversation. for a very long time for people who experience this. I'll put it that way. And it is it's tied to business actually going up. You know what I mean? Not every great feud is. I mean, this has everything going for it. Yeah.
That's about it for me.
Brandon, anything else you want to say before we sign off?
No, I think what you're saying about the capacity in the building tonight just kind of mirrors and echoes just what I've noticed anecdotally. I mean, I've always been fascinated by the ticket markets, both for concerts, for wrestling, for sporting events, and I very frequently will look at the secondary market for pro wrestling and kind of keep stock of the general on sales and whatnot. And I really can't recall a time that I have been doing this, that I have had a keen interest in ticket sales and that sort of thing, where WWE has been hotter. And I mean, of course, it doesn't compare to the Attitude Era, where every building was just selling out, you know, minutes after you put tickets on sale. But they're doing really great numbers in most of the cities that they're visiting, and tickets are selling fast and consistently, and prices on the secondary market are staying high, which is always a good indicator of how hot an event really is, because you can sell out a venue and sell it out fairly quickly, but if 3 weeks later the secondary market comes crashing down, you realize that some of that hype was overinflated, and WWE does not have that problem right now. Not only are tickets holding high on the secondary market, they're holding high all the way to the actual day of the event, which is one of the best indicators in that industry of something that is genuinely hot.
Yes. Good. Well put. Dave, thanks so much. Yeah. Any closing words from you before we wrap up?
No. I really appreciative of your work, and thanks for taking my call. And, you know, hope I was able to provide some insight into what's going on there tonight. You know,
absolutely.
Had a great time.
No, I was excited that you were going to be our correspondent tonight. Thanks, Dave.
Awesome. Take care, guys. Have a good night.
Yep, thanks. Yep, thanks for your support all these years, too. All right, very good. We're running along here. I'm just going to read one email to wrap things up on the big topic from the show. And this is Alan from Cambridge, Ontario. I really hope Cody doesn't end Roman Reigns' title reign at Mania. He just doesn't do it for me. All of this stuff about his dad, doing it for his dad, talking about his family, his opening music, wrestling has more than one royal family. I just don't care. Cody doing all this for his dad isn't much better than Goldberg saying he only came back for his son. Doing this for his dad could be his real non-storyline reason for coming back to WWE, but I need a better story on TV to get me to accept Cody as the top babyface of the company. I think it was Rich Fan, of course, the first columnist. Star of Everything with Rich and Wade on the VIP side of things, who was spot on when he said talking to Cody about his family is like calling Marty McFly chicken. It just unnecessarily makes him furious. Also, Roman is obviously the top star in WWE, and he is so far above the rest of the roster, I can't imagine him being on the roster and not being champion. I have a feeling that whenever he loses the titles that he'll be leaving WWE. So I hope he keeps them for another couple years. Thanks for the great podcast. Thank you, Alan, for the great email. Brandon, does Cody coming back to do something his father came up short on, is he hitting that note too hard? Should he hit it harder? Is it fine to hit it? Is he in the sweet spot and it's fine the way it is? Because it's Dusty, and you know, WWE has glorified Dusty in a way in recent years that I 30 years ago would have never predicted. given, you know, Dusty and his you know, Royal Jim Crockett Promotions and for all kinds of reasons. So you know, they've turned Dusty into a character after death that is bigger than Dusty really ever was in WWE when he was alive. And that's not to say he wasn't significant when he was alive, but they have really turned the legend of Dusty into a talking point. So it's not like out of nowhere when Cody, you know, is bringing up his dad. But yeah, do you understand where Alan's coming from, and how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I think how welcoming you are to the notion of Cody Rhodes as a main event act is sort of indicative of maybe where you're going to fall here. I don't fault WWE for playing into it as heavily as they have and continue to do, because I think with Dusty, it's almost inevitable. It almost kind of speaks for itself because it's not even necessarily the promotion that goes all that hard into the continued promotion of Dusty's legacy as it is the talent who worked with him. And the reason I say it's unavoidable in some respects is because nearly all of the main event scene in WWE that aren't legacy stars at this point were significantly impacted in positive ways by Dusty in NXT. I mean, so much of the cream of the crop of the main roster now, I mean, you heard Reigns talk about it tonight. He himself, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, Seth Rollins, Becky Lynch. I mean, these are all people who are regularly at the top of the card and who are some of the biggest stars in the company and will happily give much of their and credit much of their success to Dusty Rhodes. So it's almost just baked in to the product at this point. So I don't fault them for highlighting it and for tying Cody into it, but I understand how someone who is not already into what Cody Rhodes is about, I understand how they could find it a little grating or overbearing or feel as though it's not enough to connect. And it goes back to something I brought up at the start of the show. I want to see Cody and Roman progress beyond just Reigns saying that, you know, he's kind of the son that Cody wasn't for Dusty. I want to see them elevate beyond that. I like that it's the basis. I like that it's their tipping point because it's important to bring up and it's important to the journey of both characters. But I do want to see it, you know, extend above and beyond that. And I think that that's going to be important for Cody Rhodes in this feud and feuds going forward. Just one last point, too, to that conversation. We didn't touch on it specifically. We have talked about how good Reigns was in that promo. But that final line, anything that, you know, Dusty didn't teach you, I will, was, man, was that incredible.
Yes. Anything else, Brandon? I just want to throw to you because is there anything else in your notes or anything else you want to bring up before we sign off for tonight?
I agree with the callers in that it was a strong show despite not having a lot of or seemingly a lot of the SmackDown mainstays. It was very focused on, you know, the bookends of the Bloodline. You had Bobby Lashley coming over from Raw. They used Rhea Ripley quite frequently tonight in those, you know, back-to-back segments. There weren't a lot of the SmackDown mainstays, but I thought that they did a solid job of advancing stuff that they needed to for WrestleMania. SmackDown just continues to be a really easy show to watch and really enjoyable.
Yeah, this was a good episode. And that would be just on a good – like they've got a rhythm going. They know what they're doing. There's a confidence to their approach to what they're doing. They're sure-footed in a lot of what they're doing. I mean, not everything is perfect. And I mean, even Santos Escobar just suddenly being like this good dude, you know, it's like, you know, I'd like a little more explanation from that, but there's fun things going on at different levels, you know, lower card, mid card, and obviously top card. And it's fun seeing, you know, the machine that is WWE when they put out a product that is this sure-footed, that they feel this confident in with the stars that they have.
Yeah, they have a lot of – I talked a lot in 2021 when AEW was really firing on all cylinders in the summer and fall. I talked a lot about, you know, the goodwill that they had built up and how even when there was a segment that I didn't particularly enjoy or a creative direction that I couldn't really get behind, it's easier to dismiss stuff like that and you know, look over it when other things are going so well. And I think WWE is enjoying that right now. I think that they have enough that is going very, very well that, you know, the one, two, or even three things on any given Raw or SmackDown on a weekly basis that I either disagree with or just outright don't like, I'm much more forgiving and able to overlook it because there's enough stuff that I am enjoying consistently on a weekly basis.
Very good. Well, I hope everybody joins us Sunday night at pwtorch.com. Brandon and I will both be publishing reports on AEW's pay-per-view Sunday night, so check it out at pwtorch.com. Check out the flagship on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast feed. That's our blue logo show. Right alongside this, our red logo show. Both are free. Search Wade Keller and subscribe, and check out the flagship with the aforementioned Todd Martin previewing the show and talking about a lot of other things, including, by the way, a segment on John Jones's return tomorrow night, Saturday night, at the UFC pay-per-view, and whether not only his predictions on it and thoughts on the whole card, but even if you're not a UFC fan, I asked Todd if he thinks that'll affect the AEW buy rate, because people will be, you know, spending more money on UFC, and then Sunday night comes and they're like, oh man, I'm, you know, spent 4 hours watching UFC last night and I spent some money and, you know, whatever, you know, is that going to be, if one, will it affect it? And two, will it be a crutch or an excuse that will maybe deflect from, you know, real issues that maybe AEW has that needs some addressing or course correcting. So that is on the flagship this week. So check that out. Brandon, thank you so much. It's been a blast.
Yeah, definitely. Always glad to do this, and looking forward to covering Revolution on Sunday.
Excellent. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.